they're not just coming for bear honey. They're coming for any honey, period.
That was more miserable than pissed off.
Saturdays for the boys.
My ear mattress just popped.
I like, Cole, get your gun. We're in the middle of a bear attack.
It does not, in fact, put the fish in the boat for you, though, I found out.
Big buck. Big buck, Cole. Big buck.
Welcome back to Jumping the String Podcast. We have a very special episode for you guys today. Got a little bit of a round table. So Cole and I are usually used to being solo for most of our episodes. We've got two guests on the show today. We've got everyone's favorite here once again for the annual ice report. I think this is the third annual ice report. Johnny Tsunami, yeah. The Dirty Dale Duckman. Welcome, Johnny. How's it going?
Heck yeah. What's going on, everybody? Thanks for having me back, boys. It's always a pleasure to be on and talk about what little ice and all the sorrows of ice fishing in northern Indiana. It's that time of year, though. I mean, we didn't get much, but we got enough, kind of. So we can talk about that, definitely, and all the misadventures that happened this ice season for us.
And then last but not least, going all the way back to like episode 8 or 12 maybe, coming in as a sleeper, we've got Joey K. Joey, what's happening, my friends? Good to have you back.
Thank you. Yeah, here to chat about this past hunting season, and we'll learn from our wins and our losses.
Oh boy, we had a lot of losses. Probably triple the number of losses that we had wins, but it was a good year. Me personally, I think same, I don't know about you, Joey, but I've never been like inside of so many elk before, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. I have been inside, not that close. Well, I've been inside about twice that amount of elk before, but it was on a private ranch. And it's actually harder than what you and I did because we were so close to them.
Yeah, there was days where we were tripping over elk.
Yeah.
Joey'd be like, I smell elk. And then I'd be like, what do you mean? And then elk would jump up out of the bushes, run at you, run away from you.
When you say you're inside, is that if I said I was an inside, if I was inside elk, how many feet or yards would you say that would be then? Like as someone who doesn't hunt Western game, who's unfamiliar with those types of terms.
Time. So like when you're smelling elk, you're inside elk. And so, I mean, obviously okay. Our noses are not like animals. So if you smell like you're in like in a horse pasture or whatever, there's elk around, you just can't see them, you know, no matter how many times that happens. One of these days I'll learn, I'll just slow way down or slow more down than I thought I was going slow. And within 5 minutes, when you smell elk within 5 minutes, typically you're going to see them and they're going to surprise you. And, that happened within.
There was one time on, that first time, I think it was opening day we went out, Joey, but there was one time they were on the other side of the Christmas trees. So just one row of Christmas trees, yep. And they're one over, and we didn't even realize that that's how close they were. Yep. Wild times, yeah. Yeah, and thinking back on it now, kind of refreshing my memory, that second go, we're just trying to get out. And we can't even leave because we're bumping into elk. We probably could have dropped two cows if we didn't have hunters at our 6 and at our 12. And we quickly figured out that they were pushing them in towards us and we're in the middle, which is a terrible spot to be.
You're literally right on the X and having two parties pushing them. And yeah, that sounds like you're going to be in a firing zone in about a couple hours if you're lucky.
Some shots fired, there's some ricochets, and like the only thing we can do is just like drop down and not move, because so many people just shoot at movement. God. We just had to kind of wait for to figure out what was going on. So I don't know. Joey, do you remember anything more on that?
Yeah. So the first couple of shots didn't seem as close, but it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up, and the shot stopped. Like, okay. And we were deciding if we're going to go left or right. And I think he said, hey, let's just go down this way. There looks like a trail. Okay. And now we're sneaking. We see it. We see a butt of an elk. I'm like, okay, let's. And then it disappeared. And so you and I dropped down, and all of a sudden I hear boom, like it was right there. And I jumped out of my pants. I had to check them. And I yipped a little bit. I don't know what I said, but I said something. And Nick turns around and looks at me. And I go, tell me you jumped too. He goes, I jumped. And come full circle. We stood there because we didn't know where he was shooting, or she, whatever. So we're waiting. Seemed like forever, probably only 3 to 5 minutes. And so I literally put, like Nick said, put my hat on my walking stick, and I'm waving it as I'm moving forward because I didn't want to get shot.
It's probably the smart thing to do, honestly, in that situation. It's like, God, because I've been rained on during like dove season. And it's not fun. It's kind of scary too, but I could not imagine. That was rifle season, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's like like 30 times more dangerous, you know, like getting bullets flung, lead flung your way, whatever. Like, yeah, it's definitely not the same as a couple number six shot pellets kind of raining down on you.
Well, and that, you know, the saving grace, it wasn't our way. We didn't know if it was our way or not because we were surrounded by Christmas trees. And then when we seen where the shooters / hunters were, which were they're set up, well, they're shooting at that elk that we seen. So that's all fine and dandy, but you don't know when you can't see. All you do is hear like a gunshot that went off, literally sounds like went off within 5 feet from you, when, you know, it's probably 100 feet.
Yeah, that would I'd definitely be checking my underwear too. That's freaking scary, dude.
Well, and it was like the timing of it too, was those first few shots went off and we kind of sat for a little bit, and then we took like one step, and then there was another one. And we're like, we can't move.
Oh, man.
That Nick's dead on right there. That's what made it scarier. Like, all right, okay, we are not elk. Please don't shoot.
Right. Yeah. Serious.
Matter of fact, because of that opening day scenario, I got online when I got home a couple of days later and bought, I guess, orange panels to put on the back of all my backpacks, of my kids' backpack and my wife's backpack.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Never be too careful, especially when you're hunting like high pressure public stuff like that.
Wild times in Montana.
Dude, that's crazy. That was what time of year was that? Was that like opener?
Yeah, opening general.
Okay, gotcha. And that's in the fall, right? That's like, is that early fall for you guys?
Mid-fall, third week of October.
Okay, yeah. So everyone's gearing up to get out, probably, and all excited.
Well, and yeah, we're excited. And here's the kicker. Nick and I started at dark 30, an hour and a half before light. Nick, correct me if I'm wrong. You haven't made that hike before in the dark or ever, that route we took that morning?
No, not that route. I've been back in there, but not from that side.
Okay. So, you know, we're headlamping it. And again, we were 2 miles in at opening light. And so in theory, there shouldn't be much pressure. Where one side was private and then it opened up into public. Well, that private, they let, you know, friends access that private and then get there. So they're walking 500 yards.
Right. So
they had more friends than we thought.
God.
Which, hindsight 2020, I don't know why I didn't even consider that. I was just like, no one around there lets you hunt. So I just assumed there would be no hunters. You know, I've never even heard of them, you know, maybe a couple of those residents hunting, but they're usually not even out opening day because they get to just sit there,
right,
whenever. And
watch and then, guys yeah. like Nick and I sweat our butts off to get there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you guys got to put in the hard work to get up to the spot.
Literally up to the spot. It's up, yes.
Yeah, that's a pain.
And more hindsight 2020 is those hunters pushed elk, and we spotted them. And Nick had the idea of like, okay, we're going to make a beeline. They should come out right here. So we made a beeline, go basically straight down. And it was like, nom, we laid down in the tall grass. And Nick was right. They came out right there.
Well, and the plan was not to be exactly where they're walking on top of you out, so you can have a second to survey the situation. It just sounded like a freight train coming, and
I literally thought a truck was coming. I'm like, "There's not this is public and it's closed right now." I thought a truck was coming.
Oh my god!
So, I mean,
crazy.
Yeah, we couldn't have been in a better spot. Other than maybe 100 yards away so the elk could flow through and we could shoot the bulls in the group.
Yeah, right.
Well, and there's a lesson learned there too. So remind you, it's opening day. Now, after we made the beeline, we're probably 2.5 miles from the truck, and it's how, Nick, would you say 800 feet of elevation to get back?
Yeah, it's not... it's not too bad. It's just all in one hill, which is right. The shitty part.
And we both have cow tags, and there was not a legal bull. There was 20 cows of one spike, and I said, I'm shooting, because we had a cow tag. And Nick said, no, it's opening day, and there's going to be a bull. Long story short, season goes by, and I didn't even get a damn elk.
Oh, man. Tale as old as time. God, that sucks.
I will say this, though. If we both shot bulls where we were at, we'd still be there packing them out.
We would have finished up this past Friday. Come on.
you would have had to fly Cole out, and he could have helped you pack out all the rest of it.
Heck but yeah. Back to when those elk came out, what, 30 yards, Nick? 40 yards?
Oh, yeah, easy.
I mean, we could have both shot and done, game over. But
of course, we're wearing our, like, deep forest camo in a bed of dead-ass tan grass.
Yellow grass.
It just looks like two blobs laying in the middle of a haystack.
So the elk knew we were there, but the hunters didn't.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was such an interesting hunt start to finish. Joey and I were the first ones there.
Yep.
And we're packing up, we're getting ready, and we see headlights coming. We're like, oh, here's a group. And then there's headlights behind them and headlights behind them. And there was like eight trucks.
Yep.
I was like, holy smokes, we got to move. And dude, it was a race up that hill. There was, had to have been, six parties maybe. So,
right. That was, must have been a pretty hot spot. Obviously it was a hot spot because all the movement and action.
It is. But once you get up there, you have hundreds of thousands of acres of public. So once you get up there, you're up there.
Right.
And it's knowing where you're going and having, a vantage point. Because at the end of that morning hunt, like noontime, ran into a couple, older husband and wife, which I was chatting them up with them going up the hill. I actually let her use one of my walking sticks. And said, hey, you see any elk? It's like, oh, we haven't seen a thing. And Nick and I have already seen 40 elk. So there's that.
Right. Yep. So they were just casual. They were just like leisure, like hikers.
No, they were hunting elk. They were hunting, had a cow tag.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. It just goes to show the highs and lows of hunting. These guys didn't see a thing, and we were less than 1,000 yards away from them.
Yep.
Yes.
In that second group of elk we were in, and they didn't see a single one.
Yep.
And we could have, you know, we probably could have stepped out into a clearing and seen them with the binos.
Jeez.
Yep.
Guys, we're in the thick of it.
So you guys had to park like 2.5 miles from where you guys were going?
Yeah, you can get a little closer, but it's a lot harder of a hike in. Yeah, it's
terrain.
It's all side hilling. We got a plan for next time. I think we've got, and honestly, I mean, that spot exceeded my expectations. I was like, yeah, we'll get in there. You know, maybe one of us will have a opportunity. And it really, really panned out for us. So,
you think during the rut, like in September, you think there'd be more bulls in there? Because you said you only saw like a spike, right?
Yeah, that was the craziest part. We went in there a couple times for archery. I was bow hunting. And that time too, Joey, we freaking bumped into elk.
That's when I smelled them.
And it's like, and we were like, that one day we were like, we could see the truck.
Yep.
Jeez, so, you were that close? That's crazy.
Well, that we were that close on our way back.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And because during the archery season, I think I've been telling you guys before that that road is open, and then they shut it down for rifle. But we still got a trail camera down there, so hopefully,
yep,
she's still been recording.
As far as bulls go, yeah. So you have your resident herd down there that sticks on private, which is probably what 200 head herd or whatever. But they stick on private mostly. It's a huge, huge ranch. But as far as bulls go, that place where we're hunting is a big migratory, like big, huge migratory route. And so we need weather. So the first day is awesome because there's no pressure. And then you got to wait for weather, or you got to put the miles and time in. And when I mean miles and time, it's 10, 15 miles a day. And it's no joke. I mean, and this is without weather. So you'd be 10, 15 miles a day and, you know, plan on 2 weeks.
Wow. It's just a lot of walking and scouting pretty much.
Yep. But when weather hits, take your pick.
It's a really odd place. You know, the best 2 days of hunting you'll have there are opening day and the last day of season. And it's like, how do you plan an elk hunt like that?
Yeah, that is true. It's like, man. Yeah, because what do you do? It's like on the first day, like you said, do you want to, you know, go ahead and shoot a small, you know, a cow or whatever, if you got the means to do that, or do you hold out to the last day of season and hope you get something bigger or nicer? It's like, okay,
you really gotta, and that's gamble. Where, like Joey was saying, that's where I made my mistake was I should know better because this has happened so many times. The first day was so wild. I'm like, no problem. Well, next time we come out, we'll just do this again and knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
Well, and Nick could to attest. Well, let's back up. My mistake for listening, Nick. Nick could attest. I have a beautiful drawing on his whiteboard in his office of an elk, and it's not leaving there until I get an elk.
That's nice. Right. It's our lucky charm.
There you go.
Heck, but yeah. How is the pressure during archery season out there in that spot?
It's not too bad. The problem with archery season is there's just not that many elk in there yet.
I got you. Because since it's so migratory.
Yeah, you do have a better chance of, you know, shooting one in some of the lower portions. If you time it right and if you're in the right spot. Part of the problem too is that there's a lot of places they hang out during archery are either wide open or incredibly thick, and like where Joey and I were at, we couldn't have shot them with a rifle because it's so thick, let alone a bow. So it's just all about timing, getting into the right spot, being lucky. You know, our plan next year, we're going to put trucks opposing sides. I'm going to camp in there, and then we'll probably end up getting llamas, I'm guessing.
There you go. Then,
even if we don't get llamas, we're dropping elk. We'll just deal with it.
Right. we'll just deal with it. A buddy of mine that has agreed to bring in his horses to pack them out if we get him.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm all for the livestock to aid in the hunt, the llamas or horses or mules or anything. And that's just a whole new level.
It's fun. Well, and then let's back up a little bit there, Nick. Opening morning, when we're glassing right at daybreak, it sounded like the peak of the rut. And this is
Oh my God, it was wild. It was like it was September 21st.
Really? But you guys didn't get to see those bulls or just weren't in that?
Nope.
Yeah, we saw the herd that it gets kind of fuzzy because there was a bunch of hunters in there already. We were on the high ground. I spotted the herd of elk probably 1,200 yards away maybe. And I was watching them when I saw them stand up and looking down. And I'm like, oh, they're going to go. And that's what I told Joey. I'm like, we can't make it to the other side. And it looks like they're looking that way. So if they take off, it's going to be this way towards the private. So that's our best opportunity. And that's where we ended up being. A couple of youth hunters shot a cow. And another guy shot a bull that I'm pretty sure trespassed. So basically, they cut the corner, a big corner, yeah, on the private
ladders.
Just the biggest ladders.
But yeah, these weren't no Wyoming hunters, and and then ended up they were the ones that ended up shooting a bull because when we came out, all the other hunters were gone except for this one truck, and I'm like, I bet you these the son shot something, and sure enough, it was. So, but yeah, kind of an interesting, really interesting morning. A lot of good lessons learned. I know I learned about a lot more about the area. It's still my go-to elk spot.
When are you going to get that camera?
Probably
late spring.
At this rate, we'll be able to do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But probably March or April, depending on what the roads are looking like. Well, and I guess it depends when they open that road, which I don't think they open that until it might not be till May. I'm not making the long hike. Probably go shed hunt it back there once that road opens and grab it.
What's your weather usually like at that time of year, anyways?
Anywhere from pretty chilly to tundra conditions. A couple years ago, we had a really, really late winter, went into May or almost May. Now it's probably going to be wrapped up in March here. So early March at that.
Okay. Cause what's your weather like right now? Is it still pretty dang cold up there?
It was chilly a couple days ago, and now it was like, what, 50 degrees, Joey?
Yep. Yeah.
Today, so.
That's warmer than it is here.
Holy smokes. Are you serious? It's that warm up there?
Yeah.
Dang, yeah. Dude. That's nuts.
And yeah, it just turned all of a sudden, and let me remind everybody that we are at minus 30.
That's crazy that they can swing that much.
Yeah, that's a huge swing. That's probably, there's not too many places I feel like that get that type of temperature swing like that. That's for sure. Not in the U.S., at least.
Winters like this can really jack up our our fire season, which can really jack up our hunting season. So wet June, and then that will make sure that Joey and I don't spend our whole summer fighting fire.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. That doesn't sound like much fun.
Well, yeah, because when I was coming out there in 2022, you were having fires constantly. Yeah, I remember you said you went out with a respirator on during elk season because there's so much freaking ash in the air.
Yeah.
Dang. It was that bad there.
Yeah, the during archery season, early archery season, I think it was opening weekend for archery season, I was walking out at night and you could see the particulate falling with my headlamp, and it was like it was snowing, and I'm like, oh, this is making me so sick. And I remember that I had needed to use my hunting pack for some reason that fire season on a call, and I had it's kind of like a balaclava almost that has some filters on it. So I had put that on, which helped a lot.
That's crazy.
It'll bring you back to like your mill days, seeing all that soot and stuff in the air.
Yeah, working at the blast furnace.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So to be super clear, Montana sucks for hunting. So don't come, anybody.
Yeah, terrible.
Stay in your own state.
Too many fires.
Yeah.
Fires, yeah. People. I mean, it's just
matter of fact. Joey, if I recall, this was all in Colorado, if I remember.
Yeah, yeah. Right next to the Canadian border.
Heck yeah, man. That's too funny.
So you fight fires too then, Joey?
I do.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Joey, I won't say where Joey lives, but Primo Blue Ribbon Fishing Creek.
Oh man. What's
world
in the creek?
Renowned, let's just say that.
We talking trout?
Yep.
Dang, that's awesome.
Yep.
Do you fly fish a lot?
I'm learning. My youngest son is really getting into it, and there's a fly shop down the road, and so we're doing weekly fly tying lessons.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun.
I'm jealous, man. I never got into the fly scene or anything, but it looks pretty awesome. It looks like it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Matter of fact, he caught his first fish on a fly. Oh, in our backyard on the river.
Did he tie it?
No. He tied his first fly 3 weeks ago. So he caught his first.
Cool.
That's awesome.
He caught his first fish on a fly in springtime.
That's impressive. How old is he?
8.
Dang, that's really impressive, especially for a fly rod.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I'm 30 years old and don't know, and
yeah,
would be cussing at myself.
Yeah, man. That stuff's, I'd be switching out for the terminal tackle real quick after a couple of bad casts with the fly gear.
So that's the beautiful thing about it. Before he got his first fly rod, which, by the way, he saved up and paid for himself.
Nice.
Before that, he's at an age where he could fish with worms.
Okay.
And I have a buddy that is an old, used to guide fish to pay college. And
oh, man.
So he came out here and Noah slayed them in the first. Put it this way, the first 4 hours, he had 12 trout on.
Oh, man.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. All using live bait mostly then, too.
Yep. Yep.
That's a good time. Especially for a young kid like that. If you want to get like a kid hooked, like absolutely hooked up on fishing and wanting to do more, that's a good way to do it. Trout, too, the way they fight, like, I mean, we get hooked up on blue, like pan fishing out by us in the Midwest or like, you know, but like trout, I mean, talk about a like pound for pound. They're pretty good fighting fish, especially with a good current flowing through wherever you're catching them like that.
Oh, like, it's fun.
They got to put up a heck of a fight then too. So it'd probably be a good time reeling them in.
Yeah. And the last time he was in that river, was November at dusk. We were crossing it to retrieve my deer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Shot a deer across it. That's cool, man. Yeah, that's something I've never done is fished out west like that. You have to cross it off the bucket list one of these days.
I got a spot.
There you go. I'll come visit Nick. We'll do a little hunt, and then I'll come hang out with you and show me the ways of the fly rod.
Johnny doesn't fish for anything unless it starts with a P and rhymes with lurch.
Yeah, that's right, dude. It's going to be good here soon, too, now that the ice is finally starting to come off the main lake. So,
well, the beautiful thing, if you're serious about that, you and Nick could hike out of Nick's backyard, hunt all the way to my house, and then we could fish.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I forgot to say that during the intro. Joey is a mere, 13 miles away from me.
Yep.
No kidding.
Across the mountain range.
No joke.
But by road, it's almost 2 hours.
Oh, dang. So you got to go walk to his house if you need a cup of sugar, but you would never drive to it.
You're right. So,
one of these days, I want to do it. I've gone about halfway, and that's when I realized, I could probably do this, you know?
Right. Yeah. You bring all your
mutual friend, Jeff, that killed a monster bull in that hike from my house to Nick's house. But,
oh, my God, a monster.
The guy's a maniac. He packed it out by himself, made 4 trips again. Jeez. Right. I'd still be packing it out if I shot it.
I think you said it was like 35, maybe 40 miles.
Yep.
Oh my God. How long does that take? How long do you think that take him? Like a couple days, a week, or like did he just power through it and do it in like 2 days or something?
He did it in 2 days. He's a monster.
Whoa.
And he's being humble. God. Knowing him, he probably did it in about 8 hours.
Jeez.
But 2 days.
He's just fueled by those mountain whoppers like you and Cole were eating. Just going for it.
Yeah.
God. I don't know how you guys do that stuff, man. I'd be dying.
Well, yeah. We tell ourselves we're not doing it ever again, then we do it next year because it's so much fun.
Yeah.
That's the problem with hunting season. They give you just long enough to forget how shitty it was.
Yeah, those summers are long. That's enough time to like kind of. You think romantically about it, kind of almost, and it's like, oh man, it wasn't too bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll never take another game cart up a mountain again. I'll tell you that. That was terrible. And then Nick didn't give me any advice about me overpacking my backpack, so I probably had 70 pounds on my back plus pushing up the game cart for 2 miles. I'm like, I'm about wherever we camp. When Nick tells me the first spot, this is good. Yep, this is good. We're gonna go right here.
Listen, Cole just starts burning some of his gear in the fire.
Listen, I don't want to be that guy that comes off as I know more than you. Listen to me.
You do know more than me. I live in the flatlands of Indiana.
You should have been that guy.
Yeah.
And your pack was a little saggy, Cole.
It was absolutely terrible.
Cole packed for two on that trip, apparently. I would have been the same way though. I always overpack just in general, so I would have been in the same boat.
I did save Nick on the water though. Nick living in Montana and hiking those mountains did not pack enough water. And I did. Man.
There you go.
That's the one thing I had up on him.
There you go. Cole had the hydration situation on lock.
Cole saved me from 1,000-foot down climb and 1,000-foot up climb. So. Yeah.
And a bad cramp in your leg probably too.
Oh, I was not looking. I was getting thirsty. I just remember looking down that mountain and being like, well, I guess it's another adventure. I've never been down there before. And then you just look and it's like, I'm going to drink all my water on the way up.
Just get rid of it, basically.
Yeah, then have to go back down.
Yeah, that's it. Just lose a bunch of weight on your way up. That's nuts. Yeah, I'd be in the same boat, though, Cole. I'd be really screwed trying to figure out what to put in a pack like that.
Yeah, I got it more dialed in on the on the next one.
There you go.
I got, I think this is the first time we've ever done this. I have breaking news, gentlemen.
Oh, man.
Coming from Jumping the String, breaking news. Cue the music. Yeti buys Mystery Ranch packs.
No way.
Really?
Wow. Yeti.
What's a Mystery Ranch pack? I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, what boy. Is that?
They're a premier hunting and military pack company based out of Montana.
Okay. They bought them?
Yeti is... Hold on, let me get this straight. I don't want to pull a CNN here.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
No fake news.
Give us the straight facts, Nick.
Yeti is predicted to buy Mystery Ranch packs out of Bozeman, Montana.
Wow.
They're going to have them out in like 25 different colors next year.
Yeah.
Insulated packs.
They're going to
get back sealed.
They're going to get the blaze orange for when Nick and Joey are getting sniped out of the elk.
Exactly. You can throw that thing around up in the air.
Man, that's a shame. Another Montana hunting pack company gone. First, Stone Glacier, and now Mystery Ranch.
Where's Stone Glacier at now?
They're still based out of Montana, but they're not Stone Glacier anymore.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, they got bought out.
But they got new owners.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. It's just, maybe I'm just too sentimental, but once the original is bought or gone, it just doesn't hold the same weight with me anymore. I don't know. It's weird. But we're gonna pour one out for Mystery Ranch tonight. Oh. Throwing one up to the homies over in Bozeman.
Those guys are probably partying their asses off right now.
Oh, yeah, they're rich like as hell now.
$1 million contract.
Which I'm sure they were already pretty well off, but
yeah. Whatever, though. That's thanks for you guys if the quality goes down on them and the prices go up, but
prices will.
I will say, ever since Stone Glacier got bought out, prices stayed the same. They're more available, and they have more products.
There you go.
That is true.
Yeah, maybe they'll have more inventory at Mystery Ranch.
Yeah, so be able to keep up.
Keep an eye on Amazon. Your caution yellow and rose gold colored backpacks might be in the market soon.
It's going to be like the Stanley freaking mugs all over again.
It's going to be a Stanley run on Mystery Ranch packs. Yeah, that's crazy because I just sent a Facebook message to a guy looking or a couple of guys that might have been interested in this. But Black Ovis is clearancing out their Mystery Ranch packs, which I was like, that's kind of funny. But now that makes plenty of sense.
That makes way more sense.
I just Googled it in the Bozeman Chronicle. For what Bozeman Chronicle is worth, I'm not saying they're good or bad. I don't know anything about them, but they made the press release about Yeti purchasing them.
Dang.
So it is.
This is the best comment I've read so far. Someone, this is on hunttalk.com.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure Yeti's goal is to keep the same functionality and make it 30% heavier than necessary. The military will be thrilled.
Oh, God.
Well, as long as they don't use the handles that they currently do on the packs, it will be great.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Man, Mystery Ranch has had some bangers. The Metcalf, their frame system... The Sawtooth is like, I mean, any member of, well, not, I shouldn't say any, many members of our Special Forces community, as well as just Big Army and Big Marine Corps have had Mystery Ranch packs. So they've done a lot of good things for this great nation. And hopefully we can keep them rolling. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just sentimental about it.
Isn't Mystery Ranch the pack that has the adapter to put 45-pound plates on?
I'm not sure if that's them or I don't know. It seems like everyone has either a weight plate or sandbag option nowadays. So
yeah, those are Those are crazy. I'm looking at their website right now. It's nuts.
Yeah, assault packs.
There's so much stuff on here, dude. Yeah. It's nuts.
Assault packs, multi-day hunting packs, just regular backpacking packs. I mean, they've got it.
Special projects. There's, your fire and hot shot and cargo medical stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot on it.
Jeez. Yeah, wildland. You name it. They're in it.
Yeah, it seems like it. That's cool, man. It's crazy. Like I said, I was unfamiliar. They look like they're pretty quality too. $500 bucks for some of their like higher end stuff.
Yeah, good, expensive, but good pack sell. Last you your whole life, and your kid's life if you take care of it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Not too shabby. Heck yeah.
Yeah, to get one prize fishing, Johnny, to haul all your shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. God's. Freaking, I got enough of it. I never can use it because the dang ice is never thick enough up here anymore. Dude, I saw more stuff on Facebook Marketplace for sale in Indiana, like tons of ice fishing gear for sale in the past like 3 or 4 weeks. We got a cold snap out here, Nick, and all of a sudden everyone's looking for ice fishing gear. And there was like tons of dudes selling. I wish you would have told me you were looking for a graph, because I saw like 3 or 4 different graphs on there for sale, like used graphs, tons of ice fishing equipment, all sorts of stuff, like used gear, just go up as soon as people like had enough ice to ice fish out here. I was like, oh man. And it's like taking everything in me not to buy any more gear because I can never use it, but it's like so much fun to buy it and have it.
You should have just bought it and then resold it for more.
I should have just go up north somewhere and resell it.
Yeah. Because they're probably selling for halfway decent prices here. You can go up to Wisconsin and freaking make a killing.
That's what you should do, Johnny, is every year just get a some guys out here do it. They get a cargo trailer, pile all their ice fishing gear in it, and they drive to the local watering hole and rent it out.
It's a great idea, man. I saw some dude's selling the same LiveScope unit that I have, the 93SV with the basic with a 32 transducer for $800.
Oh my.
And it looked nice. It was the graph and everything. It had everything you needed, the black box, and I was like, "Oh my gosh." I was like, "I don't know if this is a scam," but it was on like an Indiana ice fishing page, and there was a lot of dudes commenting on it. And I was like, man, if this is real, like, that's a heck of a deal.
You should have bought it, tested it out. If it was good, then sold yours for twice the price and made money off of it.
Dude, exactly. God, craziness. But yeah, man, I got out and did some ice fishing. I went out twice this year. It was, like I said, we got that cold snap, cold nose.
Yep.
And it was just like a week of frigid craziness. And I think we made like probably 10 inches of ice in less than a week, which is pretty nuts for out here because it doesn't happen often like that. It's usually like, usually takes like, I don't know, like a couple weeks for us to get good, safe ice, but it was in the negative temps. So I went out here on Lake Dale for like an afternoon and I just wanted to scan around in some shallows near some lily pads. And check things out with the live scope. And I found a bunch of fish. And, of course, they were all just super tiny bluegills that were just, like, super spooky and, like, finicky. But once you got on them and got them, like, feeding, you could catch as many as you want kind of deal. And it's crazy looking at them on that live scope, though. It's nuts. Because you can tell what they're wanting, what they're not wanting real quick. And you can tell how weary they are because this lake is so shallow that when you drill or when you walk or when like a snowmobile or quad comes by, their attitude changes really quickly. It's pretty nuts. But did you end up seeing anything on your graph, Nick, when you went out ice fishing?
Yeah, it was really cool. Once I got the settings figured out on it, at first, I had my depth too deep, and I don't even know what's like the sensitivity.
Yeah,
needed to adjust that. It was set at a fixed thing, and then I set it to auto.
Okay,
and it seemed to seemed to run good.
Right.
And I got a pretty good feel for it. There was a lot of artifact on the graph, and then I would think it's just and we're getting so many freaking air bubbles. I couldn't believe it. Every 10 seconds there was an air bubble coming up.
Cuz you've got the Lowrance, it's just like a traditional 2D, and then it's got a flasher setting on it, right?
Yeah. And I never figured out the flasher yet.
The flasher's kind of weird, but guys swear by those things. Like the old heads, that's all they use.
I stopped counting after like the eighth color, and I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, man. I don't blame you, dude. Because it's such like a, I don't know, there's like the Vexlars and stuff, like you can dial those things in so like finely. Like guys, yeah, there's old guys that swear by using that stuff, especially for crappie fish and like really deep basins and stuff. But yeah, it's nuts, dude. Once you get into the electronics game, man, you're never gonna want to fish without something in front of you like that. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I'm hooked. I saw myself jaw dropping at the live scope at Shields.
Yeah, like, man. That's
you're like, that's, do I really need a pickup truck or do I want a Garmin live scope?
Do I want to look at fish, not bite my jig all afternoon on the lake?
Yeah. Yeah. But, there were sometimes I thought it was just an air bubble or artifact and I was getting a bite and I'd miss it. And man, them Kogani salmon are so tough on getting a bite. I can't remember how many bites I missed, but I went ahead and ordered some of the Wonder Bread glow jigs that are
nice,
pretty small panfish size. And I think that'll be what I need.
Yeah, man. The small tungsten.
Caught that big old honking rainbow, you know, within 15 seconds on a tip up, which is crazy. I caught all my trout on a tip up, which I never catch anything on a tip up out there.
Tip ups are fun. They're fun, but I like to catch them with a rod. But man, if you're not catching anything, tip ups are a good time. If you get like a hot day where there's just like tip up action like crazy and you're just running from flag to flag, that's a good time.
Yeah. Are you going to chase the ice up north?
No, not this year. No, everyone's singing the
blues. Dude,
everyone's singing the blues about the ice up north. I'm like, yeah, that's how all of the Indiana folks feel every year because they had to wait and wait and then wait. And then they had like a week of safe ice and then a bunch of people fell through and they tried to like, someone tried to land a plane on Red Lake up in Minnesota and it went through.
Oh, God.
And I was like, you guys don't know how to like handle like not having 25 inches of ice come December. But yeah, they finally got enough for like, I don't know, for like shacks and like big wheelhouses and stuff up north. But I think they're getting the warm weather like you guys are kind of. Like it's going to be starting to thaw soon, I think. So I don't know. I'm going to be focusing on Lake Perch here in the next few weeks. Because all of our marinas and stuff are thawed now in Lake Michigan, so we're gonna try to get out on some lake perch fishing. So hopefully we can do that, and I can get some cameras out and make a cool video of it again this year. We'll see.
Yeah, your fishing videos have been on point, my friend.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the people seem to like the Lake Michigan ones for sure. So I'm gonna try to do a lot more of those this year because I just got a big enough boat last summer to go out on my own and kind of check things out. So hoping to do that a lot more this year and just kind of get some more content on the old YouTube machine.
Yeah, you got some good stuff. If you guys haven't checked out Johnny Goodrich on YouTube.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, next time you're in town, you know, if either of you guys come back to Indiana, you too, Joey, like that'd be awesome. Especially like literally any time from like November to April, we could go out and just probably put a hurting on some perch. Like pretty confidently saying that, as long as things aren't frozen.
So. Yeah, I miss my warm water fishing.
Ah,
I
yeah,
do.
That too. It's a good time too. Pan fishing in the summertime is awesome. So,
but then I remember I don't have Chicago in the skyline, and the water isn't polluted. But I do miss just going out and friggin' throwing a giant frog on some lily pads and catching bass.
Yeah, that's a good time.
Instead of throwing my $12 dry fly onto the into the river that I just finished getting untangled.
Yep. I could definitely see that. Yeah. Yeah, I'd miss the little things like that. Like drop shot and 40 foot for perch and stuff like that. Like, yeah, it's good. You'll have to get out and try it, man. It's addicting. Especially when you get to bring home 15 quality like eating perch. Like, it doesn't get much better.
Yeah, I've never fished I might have fished Lake Michigan a handful of times other than just rock fishing at the mill when I was working.
Nice, dude. Yeah. Go for those big drum out there.
Yeah, there is a lot of downtime on the weekends working for the fire department.
But yeah, that's the like I said, the ice was thick for like a week. I got out twice. I fished a bayou off the river with some friends. Caught a couple little panfish there. My buddy Zach caught a nice largemouth bass. I caught probably a 50 freaking small little bluegill out here on Lake Dale. And that was all of my ice adventures. And now it's fairly safe to say it's not safe ice. So sights set on lake perch for the rest of the season until about April probably. So I'll definitely keep you posted.
I have another guest right here with me, my son Gavin. He wants to talk about his great deer experience this year of blowing his eye out that I did a terrible job as a parent. So take it away, Gavin.
Let's get up there, Gavin.
Let's hear it.
What's up, buddy?
What's up, Gav?
Going on, dude?
Just talk about what happened.
So I was trying to shoot the gun, and when I was shooting it, it kicked back, and my eye got a big, like, bruise around it. And then when it got a big bruise, I got an ice pack, and then I kept on rubbing it. And then Cole wanted me to try again, but I kept on shooting, and it was a good, and they both were good shoots.
Nice, good man. Good job, man. Yeah, sounds like something Cole would do.
Fought through the pain.
Yeah, no, he just wanted to come on a podcast and say how terrible of a parent I was.
Yep, sounds about right. Yo, yep. Thanks for coming on, Big G.
Scoped himself, poor Gav.
Yeah, remember when you did that, Johnny, with the muzzle loader?
Yep, that's right. I was going to tell him I did the same thing. Been in that boat, and I was probably a lot older than he was, so...
Yeah, I think we were in high school or middle school.
Yeah, yep. I was probably eighth grade or something. Yeah, that's no fun.
Just the other day, something, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was actually last season.
So Gavin is going to stick to the pellet guns, which he's very proficient at, and then I am in the. I actually won in a raffle. I won a little bolt action rascal savage that. To 22 that I'm going to build for him so he can plink away with that. Maybe put a hurt on some squirrels next year.
There you go.
Those little rascals work really well. My son Noah and daughter Brooke, that's what they run, and they love them.
Yeah. Yeah, it was $23 a spot for a raffle, and I was like, you know what, I'll give it a shot. And yeah, I won it, so I just got to go pick it up.
Heck yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah, that'll be a fun gun to shoot with him.
Oh, yeah, it'd be a blast. He's very proficient with a pellet gun, and that's what we were practicing with before deer season, and I should have done a better job.
Now you know for the next kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought that little rascal would be a little perfect gun. So you said your kids like him, Joey?
Oh, yeah. Noah's extremely proficient with them. Well, my only complaint about the little rascals is their rear sight is... So it's peep sight setup. That's what it comes with. And I bought them soft cases, and the rear sight tends to get loose and come off, which is no fun.
No, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
You can go from shooting bullseyes to hitting 10 feet away.
Right, exactly. However, it has taught myself and Noah how to patiently sight in again and again
and again. And again.
Yeah, that's a good skill to know too then, man. That's cool.
All right, gents. Well, I think we're going to wrap it there. Time has flown by. We're already an hour in. I just want to say thank you to you guys for hopping on, Cole.
Yep.
Johnny and Joey. Thank you guys so much. Joey, do you want to shout out any socials or anybody or anything?
No, man. Offline, I have a couple of guests I'd like for you to have on. I think be beneficial to the podcast, but I appreciate you guys having me on, and we'll do it again soon.
Awesome. Yeah, looking forward to it. We'll definitely have to get you on soon. Joey and I will soon be getting ready for Idaho bear season, spring bear, and Montana bear spring season, but usually get a little more excited for the baiting season in Idaho. So Joey's able to shoot a bear out there last year, so we're hoping to get after it again. Speaking of lessons learned, I mean, that's probably the quickest I've learned anything in my life was bear baiting. It was a good spot, some good action, but God dang it, I don't want to pack another single piece of corn anywhere.
There you go. You got to get Cole back out there again.
I'll pack the corn.
Yeah, that's right, dude.
So, yeah, thanks again, Joey. We'll get you on again soon for sure. Johnny. You want to shout out anything?
Yeah. Johnny.Goodrich on the InstaSlam, Johnny.Goodrich on TikTok, and Johnny.Goodrich on YouTube. All fun hunting, fishing stuff on those platforms. So check me out if you haven't.
Cool. And we appreciate you back here for your third annual ice report.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we got to get you back on again more often, too.
Well, yeah. Always,
you and Joey always both.
Around. Always around, yes, sir. Man.
And special thanks to all of you fine folks for, we're going to be doing a 200 follower giveaway here soon on Instagram. It's going to be a pretty good giveaway, and it's only for the people that are following before. Basically 200 and below are the only ones that are going to qualify. So you don't have to do anything other than be a subscriber or a follower on Instagram, and I think there's like 7 spots left maybe, which will probably be filled by the time this comes out, but so don't have to do anything except just be following us and listening to us, and thanks for all your support so far. Going on to year 4 of the existence, year 3 of the podcast. It's been a heck of a ride, so thank you guys for being there for us. Check us out on Instagram at Jumping the String. Same with YouTube. Stay easy, stay breezy. We'll catch you on the flip. Later.
See ya.
Bye.